Welcome, Low Standards and Pours. It's Sunday, September 6th, 8:02 in the evening. Detroit City, it is 70 degrees and it is a beautiful night. We are going to connect to our host this evening. Connected he is.
I just noticed I'm the host.
You are the host. Hostess with the mostest.
Sure.
You're going to do all the talking tonight.
That'll be fun. Oh, long day, brother. Long day. Yeah. But, you know,
What'd you do over the weekend? Anything fun? More family stuff?
A lot of family stuff. I actually started working on Saturday and said, you know what? I've had enough. I put in 2 hours and I says, I'm done.
I don't blame you.
I don't care how much you're going to pay me. I'm done. I got to take a break. My brain is falling apart. So, since it's my show, I'm going to tell you a couple things. I'm trying a new venue for my sitting outside and chatting with my boy. So I'm on the front porch, and it's a covered front porch. So there's a little bit of maybe an echo.
It sounds all right. Yeah.
Okay. And that sounds good. Also, I have my iPod on speakers playing in the background here. I don't know if you can detect any music in the background.
I cannot detect. You'd have to turn it up a little bit.
Let's see. Because we were talking music and stuff.
Yeah, what do you got bumping back there?
Well, you'll catch this one in a second. And I want it just to be faint background music. I don't want it to overpower everything. But since we're talking music tonight, you know this one. You picking that up?
Just a little bit.
How about now?
I can hear it loud and clear.
You know what this is, right?
Not the Money Lemon Drops.
Close.
I was
talking about.
Yeah, it's
the.
Yeah, I was just gonna say the. That was on my. This is echoing a bunny man. The. But I have not heard. What song is that from the?
Long intro for either Uncertain Smile.
Uncertain Smiles.
Yeah, it's got to be Uncertain Smile because This Is the Day sounds different.
Gotcha. Mm.
Yeah. So we'll have that going on in the background.
Yeah.
And I'm going to turn it down a little more. So I don't need to wake the neighbors up.
Yeah, I hope we don't get busted for any copyright infringements.
Well, I'm not worried about that because all we're doing is bragging about music.
Right.
So
I'm not even sure that works anyways.
I saw that you wrote the liner notes for today's show. Thank you.
Because I
seriously just got back from my ma's about 12 minutes before I texted you, which was 14 minutes ago. And so I really had no showtime prep other than the past 8 days when we keep talking that we're going to do this part of the show. And so, so I'm glad you threw that together. But basically what you were saying is, you know, we want to talk about the most influential albums or this, that, and the other. And, you know, I could care less about what top 40 thinks or, critics think. What I'm interested in is what does the individual think? What's your favorite? What's the thing that you listen to? What was your jam when you were driving? And I saw that you threw some of that in there, which was great because that's really where I want to head with this. When you're in high school, you had a jam. When you're riding a bike around in grade school, you had a jam.
Trying to learn to pop wheelies and do kickouts.
Right.
Or bunny hops. Yeah, remember Bunny Hops?
You know, there was a jam that you were jamming that was your go-to song to get you pumped to do something, or that relaxed you, or whatever thing was.
And we're not talking about Casey Kasem's top 50 either, or whatever it was.
I
can
give a crap with
Sundays.
Casey Kasem.
Yeah. This is no Casey Kasem talking here.
Top 40, by the way.
Top 40, whatever.
I don't know where they ever came up with 40 as the number to use.
Yeah, who knows?
You know, I would have gone with 100.
You think so? I would say top 20. Like, who cares about the rest? It's a bunch of filler crap. But, you know, whatever.
It is what it is.
Yeah.
So, if you want some structure to this, which is going to be very little, I was looking at the way my notes show, and this is, again, notes that I had from, like, 6 days ago. Basically, pre-high school, high school, college, and post-college. Because I would say that those are definitive times in a kid's life, in a guy's life, in a chick's life, that says, you know, all right, well, I'm now in high school, and I'm a big boy and a big girl, and I can do what I want to do, and this sort of. And then now I'm off in college, and then your taste change.
You know, this is what I was thinking.
And then you get out of college, and then your brain changes a little more. So you're growing through the progression of music, because music changes the same way you did as you're growing up, and you pick and choose and grab onto the little things that, well, that lights my fire. That's my
right.
That's my ticket right there. That's a good one, you know, or whatever.
Right, right.
You like the
Doors reference there. I saw that, heard that. Yeah, I thought about this, like, you know, everybody's got their own albums. Everybody's got their own bands and musicians that maybe are favorites for certain reasons. But right. I was thinking more of, like, something that's, like, branded into you. In other words, you know, what's that album that has stuck with you, or albums that have stuck with you for a certain reason for the last 20, 30, 40 years? That's what I was kind of looking at, you know?
And funny you should mention that, because that I as I was making my list, there are checking some recurring, twice. You know, I found out this one was naughty. yeah, I found there were some recurring themes and stuff that I consistently go back to.
Right.
So I know there. That's where I'm going with it.
All right.
So tell me what's like, you know, you're 2 years younger than me. So and for me, like pre-high school, and I'm thinking, you know, when
you were east side, I was west side, pretty much the same age.
When my eyes opened up for music, I was about 9, 10 years old, and it was all Beatles because that's what my brother was into. He's 4 years older than me, and so I just fell to the Beatles. But then as I started getting into my own stuff, it was like the Romantics, the Stones, Queen, Styx, AC/DC, you know, the Cars, Journey, Blondie, stuff like that. And then I went off into, you know, Cheech and Chong and Steve Martin albums and comedy albums. I loved comedy albums when I was in grade school. I just loved listening in what's it, George Carlin.
Yeah, yeah. I know he's one of your favorites.
Just thought it was hilarious. But I somehow just kind of fell in love with that stand-up stuff. But it was like, all right, well, that's something fun to listen to.
Yeah, we're talking about music here. Music. Things that affect your life.
What I'm saying
that help you remember things.
That helped formulate some of my thought processes too, which formulates what kind of music you like.
I can see that.
You can't – this is not a one-off topic. This is a – what your favorite music is a what's your favorite thing to do? What's your favorite – what do you do on Thursday afternoon at 2 o'clock when you're looking to do, or, you know, it's an all encompassing type question. It really brings in, it's one aspect of a complex human. How about that?
Yeah. This podcast could be very well 2 or 3 or 4 podcasts for as much as we could probably say about how we grew up, the influence of music and why we listen to what we listen to today, you know?
Right.
And, I'm sure you'll agree.
The reason I say it that way is because this is as much as it's just us shooting the shit, this is a pretty deep topic to figure.
Yeah, yeah.
Because what you're really doing is you're really telling people how you think.
Yeah, well, for sure.
Or what was it that formulated how you think right now?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that's what you're telling people.
Yeah. And I'm not talking about, like you said, I'm not talking about favorite albums. I'm talking about influential albums, things that
– the ones that albums stick
you've
with
heard
you.
And, yeah, they stick with you forever for a certain reason. You know, it doesn't have to be your favorite album. It doesn't have to be in your top 10 or top 50 or 40. It's just things that stick with you for a reason. You know,
I'll tell you one of, aside from the Soul Mining, which is, you know, right up there on the top. The one that also really sticks with me is, I just had it. I looked at it and my brain just cramped out. So it's what I get for taking off my glasses when I'm looking at it.
Yeah. I think I can sit down.
Yeah, no kidding. Oh, The Cramps, Smell of Female.
Interesting.
That live album, love The Cramps, because there's that rockabilly, just fun, but goofy shit.
That never gets old, ever. Ever gets old. It's just good classic music.
You can hear all the instruments, you know, all four of them, drums, guitar, bass, voice, done.
Yeah.
You know, and occasionally there's a keyboard, but not usually with the rockabilly and definitely not with The Cramps. When, you know, he throws in the harmonica with Most Exalted Potentate of Love, or whichever one he does. It's a remake of something. I don't know. Honestly, I've listened to the album so many times, I barely remember the name of the songs anymore.
Right.
I know the beats. I know the rhythms. I know what's coming up next, and I love it. And that's just jumping music for me, and I've loved that since, I guess, freshman year in college.
So when you started getting into, say, non-mainstream, I'll back up a little bit. For me, mm-hmm. I'll tell you a quick story. I've told you this before. But when I was growing up, I had a friend of mine that was 4 years older than me that lived two doors down, and he had a couple brothers, and his brother was probably 5 or 6 years older than me, and then another brother. But what we would do is during the day, probably in the summertime, when his one brother wasn't, when he was working, I'd go over to his house, and he had a bedroom, and he had this whole wall unit with this ultimate stereo system, and he had endless albums. I mean, he probably had 1,000 albums. And we would play certain albums, and that's kind of how I got into my music. In other words, I started listening to Queen, News of the World, Night at the Opera, and then we got into like REO Speedwagon and Foreigner and Journey. And that's when that's kind of how I developed my whole taste for music. And
Foreigner 4 was just a great album.
Yeah, yeah. And Double Vision, I mean, it's one of the best albums out there. In fact, I am on Rolling Stone's best 100 albums, and I can't believe Double Vision is not in the top 20. It's I'm kind of flipping through here. There's a lot of good albums, and I'll tell you some of them as we talk. But that is one of the best albums I think ever made, as far as.
But you're also talking about, again, personal preference, and you're dealing with Rolling Stone. So, you know, are they saying best-selling, best this, best that, you know, what are their criteria? And that's why I always have problems with these top 10 list things.
They've got Tracy Chapman. Criteria? Yeah, self-titled Tracy Chapman at 10. I don't agree. Mm-hmm. She came out with Fast Car and one other song, I think that maybe, but I don't agree that it's in the top 10 of 100 best albums of 1980s.
Great album.
But, I have not heard
that. Great album, not in my top.
I have not heard that entire album. Now, they've got The Replacements, Let It Be, as number 15, which will probably make my top five, only because I think The Replacements and Paul Westerberg, it's a phenomenal band, and they could play anything. But getting back to the way I kind of learned about music was, like I said, you know, my friend Jeff listened to his brother's stereo collection, and that's how I got into all the classics, The Who, Queen, I guess you say Journey, blah, blah, blah. And we would sit there for hours and hours on end and just kind of play music. But I kind of started with that and then got into stuff on the radio. You know, I started getting into like Judas Priest and Ozzy Osbourne and, you know, a little bit of harder rock, but it didn't stick. Yeah, it didn't stick. I liked it, but it didn't stick.
Yeah. It just wasn't my bag because it was almost seemed to me too messy.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree. It's not that I don't like it.
Sloppy.
I just didn't have a connection with it. But I did a lot of roller skating to it. But
Didn't blow my skirt up, but, you know.
Exactly.
I'm not going to, say you're an idiot because you like Ozzy Osbourne.
Right. But
this is
the thing that I get most excited about is that, you know, when I started getting a little bit closer to high school and probably 83, 84 is when the underground, quote unquote, underground or alternative music started coming out. And it's stuff that you couldn't hear on the radio, But it for some reason, it meant something. Like, this is like music that nobody else knows about. You know, like, you have to go and dig and like find this music.
You were in on
a treasure. Yeah, exactly.
You're in on a secret. You're somebody special. Oh, you didn't hear about this?
Yeah. I remember. I remember when Billy Squire came out, and I thought that guy was the best. But when I found out about the Smiths and REM and The Cure, nobody knew anything about them. And they're like, I'd go to Ann Arbor and would go to some of the music stores, like School Kids Records and Tower Records and some other places. And I'd be buying up all the CDs, or at the time, cassettes. And I'd be playing them in my car. Well, yeah, I'd be junior. So you play in my car and stuff. And people are like, who the hell is this stuff? You know, who, what are you listening to? And it felt like I had kind of found this treasure of music that nobody else knew about. Everybody wanted to listen to it because it just wasn't played on the radio, you know? And a lot of that stuff, I still listen to it today. So, Bill, did I lose you? Where'd you go? You lost Bill.
We did.
Hot Carl. Yeah, Hot Carl's in the studio. We got two Bills connecting now for some odd reason.
Not Hot Carl, it's Rogers Carl.
Oh, Rogers Carl, sorry. Hot Rogers. Oh, hold on. You there? You back with us, Bill?
Yeah, I don't know. My phone's doing weird shit. So
that's all right. Like I was saying, is that I think I had spent a lot of time with my friend Brendan. He was 2-3 years older than I was, but he got into college obviously sooner than I did. And it was a big deal for me to go drive out to Ann Arbor. And like I said, go to School Kids Records or Tower, Discount Records. We'd spend hours there flipping through cassettes and vinyl. And we would be buying up all this old stuff. Like, by the time we started doing that, it was 85, 86, but now we're buying all the REM from 85, 84, 83, you know, their past three or four albums that I haven't heard yet. And everybody was playing that in the dorms and inside the, you know, the houses that people lived in. That was the popular music. And I don't know. It just stuck with me for some reason. It wasn't your typical Ozzy. It wasn't your typical Judas Priest or Journey. That was all kind of melodies or, you know, hardcore kind of stuff. Now it was something completely different on its own. And I fell in love with it.
Yeah, there was just,
and,
there was something unique. Something just very unique.
Sure.
REM made my list in high school and college.
That's good. That's good. You know, I wouldn't put REM. I've seen REM. And I've seen them twice. But I wouldn't put them up in my top 10 for concerts to see. I don't think Michael Stipe is great. Frontman for a band. I think I would love to see them small venue, but definitely not like a large venue. Well,
Stipe is a great writer, and he's an engineer.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, to be a great performer for a show, you got to be an extrovert, a Rolling Stones frontman, or you know, something.
Yeah, Mick Jagger.
Yeah.
Yep.
You know, there's something about that extra energy for the front man that makes the show much better. But you know what was a great show? Was a great show, and I've told you this before, when I went to see the Violent Femmes, I think State Theater in Ann Arbor, and the opening band for the Violent Femmes was that band that I can't think of right now. They were just as good, if not better. And I've had that happen a couple times where I went to go see the Go-Go's in an open air big venue.
Sure.
And the opening act in 1983 for the Go-Go's was In Excess.
Yeah.
And I had already bought their first album, and I'm like, I really like these guys. We have to get there early to see the opening act. They're like, whatever. We're going to see the Go-Go's. You know, we're with girls. And it was like, we want to see the Go-Go's. And I'm like, you know what? I'm getting there early because I want to. And so we get there early, and NXS was a way better show.
Oh, I bet. I bet.
It was just a way better
show.
Nothing
wrong with Go-Go's, but it's for NXS had.
It was a swing tour, but they were just starting to play a couple of songs from Shabu Shabba.
Yeah.
Which, you know, The One Thing and yep. The couple other songs. And just great stuff, you know.
What was the, I can't think of the name of the song.
Oh, that one, yeah.
But
I remember that
I saw them for the Kick Tour, and I they're phenomenal for the Kick Tour. High energy, cool. And
yeah, good show.
Hutchins had so much, stage presence, and just watching him by himself is entertaining itself, you know.
Yeah, and, you know, we're branching off into shows, but that's not what we're going for. But, like, you know, one of the other... I guess you're pulling out albums. I was just dropping bands' names on my list.
Yeah, we do either way.
But, you know, I circled of the 30 that I typed out for high school that I did. Was The Cure, of course.
Of course.
The Clash, Susan yep. the Banshees.
Can't Susan, the, Susan Banshees. The Banshees.
And XTC.
XTC?
Yeah.
Interesting.
What about love those guys.
Mighty Lemon Drops.
Now what did you do?
I just started listening Mighty Lemon Drops, and I, you know what? That's a band gone missed. I wish I would have known about them years ago. I was heavy into The Cult and Pixies and Who's for Due, and they're all hard kind of driving punk music. But I'm listening to the Mighty Lemon Drops, and I'm like, wow, you know, these guys are good. These guys are really good.
What? You just picked them up just now, didn't you?
Yeah, just because you kept talking about them. So I started playing them. I'm like, these guys are really good.
But, you know, what's funny, you just mentioned another band that totally fell off of my list, but they're so in there. Just before you were talking about the Mighty Lemon Drops, you rattled off like 3 or 4 of them.
Yeah.
You know,
I don't know if you're a big Cult fan. I've seen them like 4 or 5 times. Yeah, they've been a loud show.
But see, Love, the Love album is still one of my favorites.
Oh, Love and Electric? I mean,
well, Electric was okay, but Love really opened it up for me. And you know, and it opened up doors to some other bands, too.
Yep.
You know, and all right, well, then, actually, the one that, because the Love album, and then let me look at my list here, because there's this particular band. Gene Loves Jezebel.
Yeah.
Because of the Cult, I regressed into Gene Loves Jezebel. And I'm like, oh my God, they're all awesome too. And then I went, I've got everything they put out on CD. I love them.
Yeah.
But, you know, but it's because of the Cult and it opened up the door, you know. And then
I think
the reason I got into Mighty Lemon Drops was because of Fine Young Cannibals. And the reason Fine Young Cannibals was the English Beat.
I got you. Public.
It was English Beat, General Public, Fine Young Cannibals was a family of, you know, how I talked before about, you know, bands break up and someone goes and they form a new band with these couple other guys. Two guys from Fine Young Cannibals break up and they form General Public. And then, you know, that whole thing. And it's just like this family of bands. English Beat went to General Public, and a couple from English Beat went to Fine Young Cannibals, and they did similar type music but different, and it had each of their flavors to it, and, like, you know, whoever the individual guys were that had their creative differences in the previous band, the other two bands were just as good, if not better,
right,
completely different and different than each other.
I haven't heard you say too much about the Smiths. I'm assuming if you were a Cure fan, you had to be a Smiths fan. And I don't see those separate.
No, and the Smiths were always, to me, the Smiths, The Cure, Love and Rockets, Bauhaus, and Susie and the Banshees are a staple. It's like, those are assumed givens. You know, for my age group, my liking.
Sure.
You have to just assume those. Those are not the unique ones that a guy might like me would like, you know. Well, and New Order, of course, is also one of them too. That's just like, yeah, of course.
Well,
of course, if you go to Joy Division.
Yeah, if you go to New Order, you got to go to Depeche Mode.
Oh, but see, the thing is, right? Depeche Mode, no. I enjoy, and I really was a fanboy for a while, but now, I listen to a lot less. There's like 3 or 4 Depeche Mode songs that I really enjoy, and it's the older ones, you know, Just Can't Get Enough, you know, any remix of Just Can't Get Enough, I enjoy.
Right, right.
But there was something to that song that I really liked, and it was probably something that I played at a number of junctions in my life, right?
Yeah, why don't we have like seen you and your wife at the Depeche Mode concert, right? It was Depeche Mode, right? Yeah. I thought they put on a phenomenal show. It was one of the best sounding shows I've heard in a long time.
I really enjoyed it. It was a good time, and you know, moreover, it was made her happy.
Yeah, for sure.
I was just there for the show and hanging out. Well,
hopefully, you got some.
You know, well, details really.
you could say yes, you know, or no.
The whole thing is you know, she really enjoyed it. You know, she likes who am I thinking of? She loves Pet Shop Boys.
Yeah, yeah.
And not Bronski Beat. Who is the one? Erasure. She likes Erasure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Again, music I enjoy, but to me, Erasure is chick music.
Right,
I got a number of their albums. It's good stuff. So, but really, the
Husker Du Zen Arcade made the list, number 33, for top 100 bands or 100 albums of 1980. Husker Du Zen Arcade. That's tough. That's right in front of Rolling Stones' Tattoo You.
this is 80s from like 1980 to 90.
Yeah. And Anita Baker's on there too. Rapture. She's number 36. I'm just kind of flipping through, seeing what.
Where does Beastie Boys land on that?
They're not. There's. I haven't even seen them yet, and I'm already up to 36. It's crazy. I wonder how,
because
and they have like
License to
Metallica
Ill was,
Kill 'Em All, at 35. It's like, what?
Yeah,
I don't know.
You know, and well, I remember what it wasn't Metallica, it was who's the one with the guy who the rock and roll band, and he
split off.
No, he kept missing all his shows because he was wasted.
That's Replacements.
No, did a double album in like early 90s. For the life of me, I can't think of who it is, but it's Axl Rose.
Axl Rose.
Who is he with?
Appetite for Destruction, Guns N' Roses.
I was working at a record store when that double album came out, like I think in 92.
That's a single album, but that was a badass album when it came out, though.
No, it was sold the first couple days. It was a double album. It was two albums. One was Red, one was Blue, or something like that.
And, are you sure that's not Spaghetti Incident?
No, it's not that.
Okay.
But it was supposed to be the greatest thing ever, and people were lined up at midnight to come buy it. At 12:01, the store stayed open, but we couldn't sell it until after midnight the very next day.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know it was a double album.
Well, it was two separate albums sold at the same time.
Oh.
If I remember correctly. And it was just a marketing
ploy. I remember the single album.
I have no idea what it was, and it doesn't even matter.
That was a badass album when it came out, though, for anybody that loves rock and roll. That, I mean, that was...
For Drugs Up Noses?
Yeah, yeah. That was badass. You have to... I loved it.
I was never a fan of Guns N' Roses.
Do I have any respect for them now? No. And I have no respect
What's
for
them. What's the one song that everybody sings with the...
My favorite one was... Queen. Keep wanting to say Dancing Queen. Oh, my God. It's ABBA.
Right. That's a completely different song.
No, the one that made it big was Welcome to the Jungle. And then it was...
Yeah.
I get on this podcast, I got blank out on everything. I swear to God.
Yeah, I know. I did, too. And I purposely did not start drinking until just now. And, I had an Irish coffee, but that usually wakes me up and gets me sharp. You know what I'm listening to right now? The Gap Band.
The Gap Band?
Yeah, I forgot all about the Gap Band.
I was going to ice skating band.
I got my old iPod from the early 2000s when I started traveling. And what I had done is unloaded like 1,200 songs onto this iPod. so that I could travel for 2 weeks at a time and have new music all the time.
Right,
I
right.
I listen to it for 8 hours a day and still have a new song.
Sure.
Usually by the last couple of days I'm repeating, but it didn't matter. But I haven't changed anything on this iPod for 12, 13 years.
Yeah.
You get a new device and you set that aside and forgot all about it. Plugged it into my little speaker thing. I'm like, oh my God, this is all great stuff. And I have 566 songs here that are only classified as 12-inch remixes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And that's not even all the stuff that I have. I mean,
no,
there's
I know.
there's another probably 1,000 songs on this thing. And, you know, I've set up my own genres for it and stuff like that based on how I want to listen to it, which is
how right, right.
customize your music all the time based on how you want to
listen.
That's
what I try to do.
Yeah. And I mean, I was listening to this yesterday while I was out doing yard work and I'm like, oh, this is just great stuff. I put on Relaxing Dudes, which included like Lyle Lovett and some other crazy stuff. And
Relaxing Dudes.
Yeah. The Lemon Trees or
Lemon Drops? No.
No, I'm thinking of
Lemon Heads.
No.
No. Shit, who knows?
Lightning Seeds.
Oh, Lightning Seeds.
Icicle Works and the Lightning Seeds.
I remember the Icicle Works, yeah. They had one or two hits.
And I think there was a couple of Pet Shop Boys songs on there. But you know, and Zymox, Clan of Zymox.
Zymox?
Yeah, remember them? No, you
don't. No, not at all.
I was hip back then.
So, what group do you think defined?
Yeet Man just joined us. I think
hey,
I can't read.
What's up, man?
Yeet Man 69. That was original. And that's me being an ass. Just punch me in the nose later. What was your question, Cheese Whiz?
So what album are you thinking that defines the 80s for you? That's a big question, but you want to go there? I mean, if you had to pick an album that would define the 80s.
Well, there's no answer to that.
Oh, there's got to be. I mean, pick an album you think that would stick in your head. Like if you just said, if you went back to the 80s and said, you had to hold up one album that said, this is the album that I believe that represents the 80s. What would it be? Get any idea?
Probably for me, mm-hmm. it would be the first Romantics album.
Really?
Yeah.
No kidding.
Because it opened the door. That was my gateway drug. Romantics and the Cars were my gateway drugs to, the Ramones.
So no shit.
Those three would be my gateway drug in the 80s. Well, again, I was a Pretenders fan in 79.
Yeah.
You know, and so when all this stuff, that's the neighbor's jackass car. Thank you. Sorry. Sounds like a pile of crap. Sorry.
The hell was that?
That was a car. A piece of
really?
Shit car driving by. Yeah, but no.
Apparently.
It's not like
my car back in high school.
I was into those offbeat stuff when I was, you know, back in 79 when I was still just a kid.
Yeah,
but it was because you know I've had the older brother who was already into some of that stuff, and I'm like, this really rocks, and this is actually going to make me unique from somebody else, and you know, as a 11, 12 year old kid, that's what you wanted to do is be different.
Yeah, that's
and
why
so I was
that,
into that
how I got into alternative music. Yeah, nobody else knew about
yeah,
it. You had to dig. You know.
You know, and I remember when I found the Echo and the Bunnymen 7Cs album.
Yeah.
I was in Ann Arbor buying albums at whichever that big record store was.
School Kids Records.
Yeah.
That was the only place to buy records.
It was a packed house. And
yep.
I saw, it was like, oh my gosh, here's an Echo and the Bunnymen album I don't have. And picked it up. I'm like,
they had a lot of EPs there. Yeah.
Well, no, this was a CD.
Oh, okay.
I was grabbing CDs. CDs were just coming out. I mean, well, this would have been 86.
It's the time that the time I started going there because I got my license and I was able to drive to Ann Arbor.
You and I probably passed each other.
You probably I was there every Saturday almost, literally. No joke. I'd go see my friend Brendan, and I'd park over his place. We'd walk down to School Kids. Like I said, Tower was on the other side of the Diag. We walked down to Discount. Was
sure kind of in between School Kids and find the right spot.
Yeah, probably hey, did.
Pink Squirrel's here. That's awesome.
Pink Squirrel. I know that guy.
Pink Squirrel.
James.
Thanks, James.
Who's a group, well, that was a group called James?
We're a little we're a little slow. Yes, and James also makes my list.
He doesn't really? Bands. I remember James vaguely, but it's, I don't remember.
There's something about the guy's voice, and he just belted it out. You know, this is something that came up in my notes, too.
So The Romantics is your favorite album?
No.
All right, go ahead.
You said something that defined the 80s for me.
Yeah, you said Romantics.
Yeah.
Because I find it hard to believe, but I'm taking it. I'm taking it as the.
It was a gate. As your gateway.
Yeah. Because no, I get it. I get it.
Look at the Romantics. Rock and roll, rhythm and blues. Sort of a Beatle-esque type music. You know,
kind of a little poppy.
You need to zip it for a minute. So let me get the thought out. So
go ahead.
Romantics. Damn straight, goddammit. so Romantics, a little poppy. A little Beatlesque, and I was already into the Beatles, so this was a good progressive next step. The Romantics were a Detroit band, so it was, you know, there was a connection there, and also the way they played the music, it was high energy, good fun, and you could hear every instrument.
Right.
Because of that, that opened the door for both rock and roll type things, and this new music that was just starting to come out with things like the English Beat and it's this British Invasion and the Jam, you know, and then 81 MTV starts.
The Jam. God, the Jam's a good band.
Up All Night, baby.
Yeah.
You know, I don't like Mondays, but there's all sorts of, but to me, you know, yeah, I liked AC/DC, Back in Black, but, you know, that was grade school. And I liked the Styx and Queen and the Stones and the big bands of the day. You know, Bob Seger was fine. All of these things we wanted to listen to. But then the Romantics came out, and it was like, this is good stuff. And, like I said, it opened a door. It was a door
that swung the palate a little bit, you know?
It's a door that swung both ways. It said, I can listen to this rock and roll stuff because the Romantics have some of this rock and roll stuff. And yet they're just creative enough and just goofy enough that some of this other goofy, crazy stuff is going to be fun. You know,
right.
Fun Boy 3 and Bananarama.
Fun Boy 3?
Oh, yeah.
Never heard of them. There must be an inside thing.
No.
Fun Boy 3. Kidding.
It's Fun Boy 3 and Bananarama were together. A couple of the girls from the Go-Go's came out from what was the name of the album label?
Oh God!
If I named off a couple other bands, you're gonna go, oh, these.
No, you're not doing Sub Pop Records or.
No, it was something out of Britain.
Oh.
You know, to me, that just opened the door. And because of that, I got into a whole bunch of other stuff.
I feel a little bit – I'm more of like Replacements, Let It Be is definitely an album of the 80s for me. Morrissey, Viva Hate. I got to remember that maybe was the 90s. But Hatful of Hollow. The other one was The Pixies, The Pixies. Yeah, Meet His Murder, of course. Bossa Nova, Surfer Rosa. God, what else did I listen to? And then obviously REM. Like,
I forgot to mention Ministry.
Ministry's got an interesting kind of history about them. They went from like kind of a poppy to but real dark and gothic right away. In one album, they changed producers and they changed right away. And they changed for the better, but it got real dark real fast.
But see, here's the thing with Ministry. I fell in love with Ministry on their first album with Sympathy because I liked the melodies. I liked the poppiness. It just had a sound to me. And again, you know, what was I, 14? Not even.
You remember the group Sloan from Canada?
Sort of.
No? Okay.
Yeah, I if you said something, Matthew, I'd go, oh, yeah,
like, remember Matthew Sweet? The album from Matthew Sweet, Girlfriend?
No.
If you haven't listened to that album, it's one of the best albums out there, Bill. You should, if you haven't heard Matthew Sweet, Girlfriend, listen to it.
The name is
it
familiar.
Is phenomenal. Phenomenal. Phenomenal album. He never made one since. But
you're going to make me write this down, aren't you?
Yeah. Write down Matthew Sweet, Girlfriend.
Yes.
And then, yes. I mean, we were just talking, me and I lost fuck balls over there. She's
that's all right, but no, so I want to go back to this ministry thing.
Yeah, I have to make a cocktail real quick. So can you entertain yourself for 10 seconds?
I'm going to tell the story for our two listeners who aren't related to us.
Yeah, James and Pink Squirrel, maybe nonsense. Listen in.
Be out there still.
He might be. Heatman's still there. He's listening.
And if anybody wants to join in and say, you know, these were the influential songs.
Yeah, dial in.
When I was growing up. Yeah, we don't care.
We're 50. Us. But if you guys have something that you might want to relate to, dial in. We're not shy. I'm going to go make a clear beer cocktail. I'll be back in 20 seconds. Keep talking.
Take your time. I'm going to ramble. I wish I was 50 still. But no, that ministry album was very poppy, very Resnick, I think, was the guy who's front man for ministry, hated it. And for the longest time, well, I bought the vinyl, but I wanted it on CD. But the longest time, he would not allow it to get re-released because he hated that album so much. And then that came out in 84. And then 85, he came out with Every Day is Halloween and a couple other songs. There's a four-song mini CD type thing. And those four songs just went from this poppy thing that he had just did to dark. But it was good. And I'm like, all right, I'm still on board. And then he came out with the next album, which went totally into like some kind of really dark punk. Just, I don't know. It just went. I was talking about Ministry's third album, just was not my bag. And then
it was 10, too dark.
15 years later, he comes out with Jesus Built My Hot Rod.
Oh yeah, phenomenal.
I love that song.
I still love that song.
That song it is so up and pumpy and dark and fun and just highly energetic. I'm like, oh yeah, this is my bag. And so, you know, I've got like 7 disc versions of that on my something somewhere.
I got a question for you.
Yeah, sure.
Neither one of us ever talk about this band, but it is a band that needs to be talked about. I don't know a lot about them, but they are a band that we both respect. That's Sonic Youth. Sonic Youth never got that much airplay, and they were never really hit the big headlines, but they were so well respected.
Influential too.
Yes, don't you agree?
Yeah, a lot of
bands. I don't know a ton about them, but
I don't either, but I know I've heard a lot of other bands reference them as part of their you know, like, oh yeah, we Sonic Youth, and you know, but again, that was back in the early 80s when people were just trying everything.
Yeah.
It was, let's just get crazy, you know?
Yep.
Let's get nuts.
Prince reference?
We've never mentioned Prince before.
No. Prince is fucking genius.
Freaking talent. Just amazing.
I wish, you know what, Bill? I wish Prince didn't have such a sexual, what do you call it? Overtone? Undertone? What do you call
that? For him, it's an overtone.
Is it just an overtone? I wish it was more of a cleaner Prince, bluesy kind of songwriting. I think the big turnoff was, and I appreciate him because he did what he wanted to do. I always reference Tom Waits. People can't stand him, but he did what he wanted to do. And I can appreciate it about Prince. But when you cross over music with as heavy as his sexual overtones were, it turned a lot of people away, but the guy was genius. The guy was effing genius.
Prince is, to me, to music, Eddie Murphy Raw is to comedy.
Right, exactly. Raw came out, holy shit.
And it just opened up a door that people were semi-afraid to go through.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Richard Pryor had been walking through that door back and forth, left and right. But
yeah, he opened the door.
He was,
sure.
He was allowed to. He was the yeah. only one allowed. And then when Eddie Murphy came out with Raw, it was yeah. like, all bets are off. And it's the same to me with Prince.
That's probably one of the best stand-ups in the last 30 years, though. You got to admit.
Raw?
Yeah.
Well, it's a big seller, and it was classic, and it was good for its time. Now you look back at it and go, yeah, that's funny.
You're right, right.
But back it was amazing. Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. And, you know, but again, stand-up comedy has grown and changed the same way that music has grown and changed.
What's up,
Sudan? The same way that you and I have grown and changed.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what'll be funny, Eric, is if somebody actually does call in and tell them about the things that they've listened to that made them grow and change. I think that yeah. would be awesome.
That would be cool. Anybody care to call in?
Yeah, anyone of you four listeners who aren't related to us can feel free to yeah. call in and we'll shoot the shit. Why not? We're not afraid.
Yeah. Well, ripped hitter chip.
Yeah. Bring out your dad. No, bring out the crazy stuff. Well, you know,
I'm still stuck. I wasn't expecting to hear that Romantics was your 80s album or 80s band, but good for you. That's cool. It's cool.
Well, but the thing is I can always listen to the Romantics. Always.
Yeah.
To me, the Romantics, the Cramps, I can always listen to them. The Cure, I got to be in the mood for. The Smiths, pretty much you got to be in the mood for. Or, sure. Or something like that. But, you know, that and Mighty Lemon Drops, I've never turned them off.
If they right, come up right.
on my playlist, I never turn them off. Because I like that, you know. And, like I said, the Romantics are the same thing for me. And I think there's a connection because one of my buddies in high school, his cousin was the drummer, Eddie, what's his name? And, you know, or Jimmy Marino was his cousin, I think. And, you know, it was just kind of neat that, you know, I've got this connection. I never met him or any of that stuff. But there was something to it. It's like these are local boys made good.
And, right, and right.
Because the music was so good, it just really made that extra leap for me. I'm like, all right. And, of course, you know, at the time I was a young punk. I didn't know any better. And it just stuck in there. And then, like I said, it opened the door. The doorway opened both ways. It let me go to the crazy wild punk stuff and still enjoy the rock and roll stuff. Because there's that link in the middle of the Romantics with just good rock and roll with a bit of a twinge or something to it.
Did you get deep into the punk stuff or not really? Punk, I mean, I'm talking punk like Husker Du and like Black Flag. You didn't get deep into that kind of stuff.
Well, I really enjoyed Fear. They had an album called More Beer, which was hilarious.
Yeah.
I was very selective in my punk.
Yeah, I was too. You know, I was too. I thought I was a Black Flag fan, but I never really was. It was more of a anti-mom and dad kind of thing.
Well, and for me, Black Flag was a enjoyment in passing. I can pick out one or two songs. I couldn't listen to the whole album.
No, you know, no, I
agree. Same with Fear, you know, of the 10 songs, I could listen to 8 of them.
Right,
which
right.
Which was a lot for a punk album.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Fear would put 30 songs on an album.
Yeah, and this could get burned out.
Yeah, 7 of them would be, you know, 38 seconds long.
Right, right. It's like the Ramones, space. Yeah.
Well, but see, the Ramones, they had that punk feel to them, but they had the rock and roll rhythm and blues basis.
Right,
so you
right.
can listen to the Ramones and actually hear music. They were actually playing music.
A buddy of mine was big time into X. I didn't know a lot about X. Did you?
I got a little bit of their stuff.
They had a few, I remember. But yeah, that and like Killing Joke. It wasn't up until a little while ago. I really didn't understand Killing Joke until I listened to some of their albums. And I was like, oh, my God, that's right.
Yeah, that's Killing good stuff.
Yeah.
And then, you know, if you're going along that line, then you look at The Damned. Shriek Back. Where did the other one go?
I never knew anything about Shriek Back.
Jesus and Mary Chain.
Yeah, yeah.
You know.
Sisters of Mercy. Sisters of Mercy I always liked.
And then, of course, that opens you up to Clan of Zymox and Zymox and Gene Love Jezebel.
Right, right,
you know,
right.
You know, of course, all through the background of that is Joy Division, Bauhaus, New Order, Love and Rockets, you know, all the good ones.
So, yeah. See, I went from Husker Du, and Bob Mould split off from Husker Du and formed Sugar. So I followed Sugar for a while. And then Sugar and, or I should say, Bob Mould and David Bowie were kind of, David Bowie's always been one of the big ones on my list. I'm surprised I haven't said that.
I'm surprised I haven't joined in on that too. But
You
realize we grew up, hey, two dumbasses, thanks for joining us. Realize we grew up in a time where music just exploded.
Yeah.
Everybody could make
it an was album. Post-disco, like, complete opposite of disco that was out there, all that.
Right. And I still have my dread card somewhere.
Remember what it stands for?
Nope, not at all.
Detroit Rockers Engaged Against Disco.
Okay, well, that's right. So I still have, but I still like Casey and the Sunshine Band.
I listen to 70s soft rock all the time. 10cc and, Jerry Rafferty and, you know.
But what I was getting at, though, is we were at the right age, at the right time, to really just fall in love with this crazy ass music that was coming out. Everybody was doing an album, you know. Echo and the Bunnymen came out and they were playing a guitar, a drum kit, and some other machine that made music.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and then, you know, what's his name was doing the vocals. And it was like, this is just weird. But yet it was good stuff. And it was creative and it was interesting.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's what we grew up with. And it's no wonder that, you know, we look back, well, at least no wonder to me that I look back and go, well, no wonder I'm flexible with people wanting to do different things and having different preferences and this stuff, because I grew up in a time where that was kind of cool to be different and be yourself.
Yeah. I think people wanted to be different back then.
And it was, but it was underground and it was persecuted and it was like, well, what do you mean you don't like boys? You don't like girls or you know, whatever, you know, there's something wrong with you. Well, you know, in my mind, I was like, that's somebody interesting. I want to hang out with that person.
Wait, what song was that? What song were you just referencing? Is that Erasure? Don't like boy, don't like girls. Something like that. Maybe you said something.
I have found that a lot of times in my regular speaking voice, I will reference songs and say lyrics of songs without even realizing it. It just rolls off the tongue sometimes.
Right. I got you.
And I don't know what that one was. Unless you were thinking of NXS, Black Boys, White Girls.
No. I can hear the song in my voice in my head, but I can't picture who it is.
That's all right. It could have been Karen Finley for all I know.
Yeah, who the hell she is.
She's the one that clears the room. You want to get somebody out of your house, you play Karen Finley's Yam Jam at top volume. They'll be gone in 38 seconds or less.
And they're out of there?
Oh, yeah.
So if you had to pick a band from the 80s to come play at your 60th birthday, who would you pick?
Well, you're asking me a difficult question because
I'm just throwing it out there. I'm being random for a reason.
It would be Six and the Sevens.
Wow, I get that.
Well, only I'm because talking
about 80s bands. 80s bands you grew up with. I'm talking about The Cure. I'm talking about, you know.
But you and I have had this discussion before.
I know.
I don't want to meet my heroes. I'm not interested.
Right. No, you know, I appreciate that. I do. I appreciate that.
You know. Because I'm not going to – I mean, sure, I'd spend $10,000 to have somebody awesome throw a great party.
If you're going to define yourself by a band, who might it be?
Why don't you ask me if you could taste toilet water, how many molecules of poop are in it? Come on, man.
If I had to define myself growing up in the 80s, I'd be all over probably – and it's hard to say – it'd be a split between The Replacements and REM, but I'd probably go with REM. I still today worship REM. I love them as much as my parents. I do. And I don't know why. I just do. But there was something about The Replacements. They could play anything. They could play a song like Androgynous. They could play a song like We're Coming Out. And they did a cover for Kiss, Black Diamond. It was all good. And it was all, some of it was hard punk driving music.
What about some the Smithereens?
I love those guys. When I moved up, cool story about the Smithereens is I loved them growing up. And the what was the album? Green Thoughts was one of their big ones. Yeah. And I went to, when I moved to Baltimore in 2003, they came to downtown Baltimore and played. And I remember I didn't know anybody in Baltimore. I didn't have nothing to do. It was a Saturday. It was in some district. I forgot. I'll tell you. But they went and played down there, and I rushed down there and saw them. And, you know, they're old dudes, but, man, they fucking jammed it out.
Like the church was when you and I went and saw them. They jammed it out. But, no, see, I saw the Smithereens at a tiny little club in, like, 86 or 87. It was such a tiny little club, there was still a pool table there.
Right, right.
And before the show, I was playing pool with my buddies, and we were just having a good time. And it's like, oh, that's right, the show is tonight. You know, it was one of those wacky, just, oh, that's right. Oh, we got to buy tickets now.
Right,
and it was just like, we just go over to the door. Oh, we wanted to stay, so we had to go buy tickets. Fine, whatever. And it was just a rocking great show. I'm like, oh, this is great. And it was like being at the Hamtramck Music Festival. It was that close. It was like
70%. Right there. Called Green Thoughts. 70% of the album was phenomenal.
I remember that album. I do have a little sore spot for the Smithereens. I dig them.
Yeah, I'm gonna look it up
because of that show. But still, you know, I wouldn't ask a band to come play for me.
I just let it out there.
No, I understand the basis of the question, but I'm sure there's somebody else out there who's listening that might say,
if I could have somebody play for me, it'd probably be the Pixies. I love REM, but I think the Pixies put on, every time I've seen the Pixies, they opened up for U2 for, I think it was Joshua Tree. And I saw them, and I've seen them probably three or four times since then. But they put on a phenomenal show.
And who did the Pixies break off and then become PIL and somebody else?
No. Pixies just broke up because of artistic differences, but they came back.
They didn't do any other gigs, start any other bands of any kind?
Frank Black, the lead singer, came back as Frank Black and the Catholics, and they had a couple hits, but they always stuck pretty. Kim Deal. It was Kim Deal and Frank Black had an artistic difference, and they both kind of formed the band themselves. And
remember this one?
What do you got playing back there?
Little Big Audio Dynamite.
Big Audio Dynamite?
Yes.
Big Audio Dynamite was formed by... It was a
guys from the Clash.
Yeah, it was Clash and somebody else, right?
Yeah.
Razor?
No, I don't think so.
No, I can't remember.
Hobo Chillin'. Is it really you, Hobo?
Hobo's back?
I miss you, Hobo. How you been, brother? Oh. Apparently,
who are you just listening to?
His ass is on fire. Big Audio Dynamite.
Oh, yeah. Big... Audio
Dynamite. It's Joe Strummer of the Clash, another guy from the Clash, and a couple other guys from somewhere else.
Mick Jones, Don Lutz, Dan Donovan, Greg Roberts. More. So maybe it was just.
Oh, yeah. Joe Strummer went elsewhere. I forgot about that. It was Mick Jones.
Yeah.
Big Audio Dynamite did like three albums, and they were just phenomenal to me, or at least the three that I own. You know who else? Another Detroit band, very unsung, really weird, and really just fun to listen to. Was Not Was.
Oh, yeah.
Two was albums, Not Was. Really worth every penny to buy them both for the uniqueness of the music. maybe three albums. No, because they had, three. I have three of their albums now that I think back. Born to Laugh at Tornadoes, the other one, and the other one with Walk the Dinosaur.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And, you know, I mean, just fun stuff. Just fun stuff. Interesting and unique. I even have a 12-inch version of The Freaks Come Out at Night.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Just, I mean, and it's iconic early, mid-80s goofiness, but Detroit goofiness.
Right, right.
You know, and those guys, Don Was or one of the other Wases, they've gone on to produce a lot of famous people and stuff and just make some really good music. And it's just like, these guys, unsung heroes.
You know, the other one is, we don't mention too often, which is Oingo Boingo.
Oingo Boingo. On my list.
Yeah,
they're
Oingo
on my
Boingo.
List.
Yeah. Another great 80s band and talented. So talented.
Yeah. The horns are remarkable.
It's like they didn't get enough recognition back in the time.
No. Well, you think of Weird Science. You know, and I gotta give props to John Hughes for pulling out a lot of the unique 80s music, you know, the Plimsolls. And just some really off-the-wall bands that never really did anything more than one or two songs on a soundtrack for him. But John Hughes was a big 80s music guy, and he's on my list here of, like, if you don't mention it, we're going to have to kill you, Bill. And it's me talking to myself.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, you know, what I said, I still blame you for Cat Power.
Do you, have you got any Cat Power?
It's your fault.
You know, Cat Power, I'll tell you the story about Cat Power, is me and my old buddy Carmelo went to downtown Ann Arbor. We went to this restaurant / bar. It was kind of like a tapas place, you know. You can get beer and cocktails and small things to eat. And we went in there one day, and I don't remember the name of the place, but Cat Power was playing, and I asked the waiter, I'm like, hey, do you know what this is? And he's like, yeah, it's Cat Power. And I'm like, yeah, it's pretty good, and blah, 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 blah. So I went and downloaded a bunch of stuff from her and blah, blah. We went and saw her in concert, and she's okay. She's kind of – she had a big drinking problem, so she never knew how to finish a show. But there's something to be said about the way she sings and a little bit bluesy, loves to tell a story. And
yeah.
Nothing fake about her, and just good to listen to, you know. And
For
any of you that like female singers that are
– weird.
Yeah, well, she had a
weird,
you know, she had a big problem. Like, you remember Natalie Merchant and 10,000 Maniacs?
Yeah,
Natalie Merchant could sing like you wouldn't believe. And I went and saw them at the Fox. Yeah, I went and saw them at the Fox when 10,000 Maniacs came out with "In My Tribe" and
great album.
But yeah, and she had a big problem with facing the crowd while she was singing. She had, you know, a lot of nervous stage presence. And Cat Power was the same way.
Right.
She had a big problem with stage presence and facing the crowd. And she would get through it, but she'd always chop up her shows. Her shows would only last for 30 minutes or an hour. And she would come up with some excuse why she couldn't play any longer. And she got a lot of bad publicity because of that. But when I went and saw her, she sung for maybe an hour or so, and then she kept saying something about her voice, and she cut it short, you know. And but, you know, hey, those are musicians. You know, what are you going to do? You know, it's probably a $50 ticket, so I'm not out that much money. But she pretty good, put in a pretty good show.
Huh.
Yeah.
Well, I still blame you for Cat Power.
You listen to Cat Power? You still do?
Yeah, because it's your fault.
You know, Cat Power got me into Florence and the Machine. You remember Garbage? I used to love Garbage.
Right.
Got Garbage. I forgot her name. Was it Alice? I forgot the lead singer's name. Cranberries, Garbage, Cat Power. You know, I'll tell you what. I'm a huge fan of Sarah McLachlan. I think she's got a beautiful voice. Yeah, I love it all.
Nora Jones drives me up the wall.
I never really grabbed on Nora Jones, but I like her. She's got talent.
We could just sit here all night and just rattle off names of bands of love, and we could fill an hour and a half show and just go, remember this. And that.
Well, hopefully our listeners are writing some of these down.
Well, and go out there and buy the music.
Yeah.
Go to the actual artist's website and buy the music from the artist.
Right.
Support the artist. Don't support the music.
I heard Shane O'Connor is becoming a nurse. Yeah, she's gonna become a nurse. So she's
good
gonna,
for her.
Yeah, she's gonna partake in music part time and nursing part time. But she had a couple of hits I liked, but never one of my favorites.
She was pretty creative.
Too political.
Yeah, I don't mind a little political music once in a while. Because you can always turn it off.
Right,
not pervasive like, some other things.
I don't know, Bill. It's been an hour and 6 minutes. What do you want to do? You want to carry this on to our next show?
Sure. I was thinking we'd get some jack wagon to call in and talk music with us, but apparently everybody's too chicken. Sorry, I sounded like a Muppet.
I'm waiting for it to light up. I haven't seen anybody light up yet.
Somebody get some balls and tell us about music that you like.
Maybe we're too old.
We don't judge. It could be something.
Should we talk about electronic music?
Well, I got Enigma playing in the background right now.
Well, yeah, it's old stuff. I'm talking about Crystal Meth. Maybe Nazi. It's old too.
Yeah. Chemical Brothers.
Fat Boy Slim,
I like.
God, I don't know. I don't know what else is out there. I know a bunch of stuff, but it's not as clear as 80s music.
Fat Boy Slim when he got. Am I going to get to finish my story? You're going to cut me off.
Yeah, no, go right ahead. I'm listening.
All right. So Fat Boy Slim did the video with Christopher Walken dancing.
Oh, it was the best. Yeah, it was the best.
That's a phenomenal video. If you guys don't, any of you four who are not related to us who are actually still listening, you want to get entertained, you Google on YouTube or look up on YouTube Fat Boy Slim, Christopher Walken.
Yeah.
And it'll come up with the video of Christopher Walken in his 60s dancing to this song, and it is stellar.
Well,
the video makes the song, and the song makes him dance.
It was called Praise You.
It is stellar.
No, Weapon of Choice. But that was in 60s style suit.
Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. But a very good one of the best videos out there by far.
And it was made long after videos were sort of defunct.
Yeah. What's up, Rick?
Which I just think is great. Rick, join us. Hey, Rick, how you doing, brother? We're talking music, brother.
Yeah, we're talking about 80s music.
Yeah, it could be any music. It's the music that made you. What do you listen to these days?
What's the music that defined you? You get some piano keys and... I don't know. I can't.
Yeah. Go ahead, Eric. Eric, ask Rick the question. He's got balls.
All right, Rick. What 80s is fantastic? What music defines you, Rick? If you had to pick an album or a band, what would it be that defines you? You can't say,
He can say whatever.
You can say whatever
you
want. Fine.
He's
going to say Buns and Noses. I listen to everything.
No. This is not a one thing answer. It's not just a here's my answer. It's a discussion. So this is a call-in question.
You are the host.
Your call-in question. What is the call-in question, Eric? What is the call-in question again?
The call-in question is, if you had to define yourself by a song or a band, who or what would it be?
Why and what drives you to think this is the one that you. Were you a teenager when you heard
Kid Rock? Well, we can appreciate Kid Rock.
Oh, crap. That came on the radio. What was the one?
Kid Rock. We can appreciate Kid Rock. Yeah. He's a Detroiter.
He rocks.
You know what I like about Kid Rock?
Kid Rock.
You know what I like about Kid Rock?
He's got big fan.
You want to hear about Kid Rock? Right, really like about Kid Rock?
He's a real guy.
Not that he's from Detroit.
Tell me.
Because his tickets are $20. I checked out a while ago, but Rage Against the Machine is coming back for they were like defunct for like 10 years. They're coming back. You know how much they want for lawn tickets? Did I tell you?
No. How much?
$275. That's what I said. Fucking bite me. It's like, you know, that's fucking highway robbery. Whereas Kid Rock, $20. You go to Comerica Park in Detroit and go see Kid Rock for $20. Now, I'm sure he'll probably put on just as good a show as Rage Against the Machine. You know, right. I'm not a big fan of Kid Rock. I love him. I really do. I like him a lot. I love him because he's from Detroit and he's kind of a real guy. But there's no way in hell I'd ever pay $275 for Rage Against the Machine. Like, who do you think you are? Even the Stones can't pull that or fucking even whatever.
Well, they could.
No. Stones play so much, they can't pull $275. The only people who could pull $275? You know, if Queen came back with Freddie Mercury, they could pull $275.
If Queen came back with Freddie Mercury,
yeah, there would be some serious
religious implications. But
you know what? ELO, I was going to go see ELO, and they came back on my birthday last year or 2 years ago. They're the same thing, $250 for lawn, for regular tickets. I'm like, there's no way. Yeah, I love ELO, but there's no way I'm paying that shit. No way, Jose. Yeah. No way. It's half my car payment.
Oh, you remember the Thrashing Doves?
What? Thrashing Doves?
A band called the Thrashing Doves.
Is it local? Like,
I forgot that
is
I
Is that like local Toledo or something? Know.
They were one of those just really hidden, nobody knew them. And if you knew them, you were really cool.
Yeah.
And this is the song, Jesus on the Payroll.
Jesus on the Payroll. Hey, Rick. Kid Rock lives like 40 minutes from where we're at. I've been by his house before.
This is just a goofy, fun song. Some good guitar, some good bass. Can you hear that? Yeah.
What's the name of this band?
The Thrashing Doves. They did the I Want to Be a Flintstone.
It's a stretch.
I Want to Be a Flintstone. Yabba Dabba Doo Time.
It's a stretch.
But this one was the one that sold me on these guys.
I don't think Rick would even like it.
Well, you know what? Like, it's what I like.
That's right.
And I like what I like, and you guys like what you like.
I'm not feeling it, Bill.
Yeah, well, you know, you don't have to.
I am not.
So, there's one that I need to bring up. It's all right. I got Jesus on the Payroll. It's just a funky, good beat. You can dance to it. But no, so I was going to bring this up. One of my favorite videos ever as a kid. And I think this marked something for me as well, was Till Tuesday, Voices Carry.
That was your favorite video?
Not, I won't say favorite. It was a very influential video.
Why is that?
Because I watched, if you watch the video and listen to the words of the song, and in the video, not the song they play on the radio, but in the video, there's discussion between her and him.
Yeah.
And basically, he's a bully and won't let her do her band thing.
Oh.
And yet, the band thing is what's paying the bills and this, that, and the other, or something. And it's just one of those where I looked at this video and I'm like, you listen to her sing that song, Voices Carry, and she's belting it out. And you can hear she's singing from down deep, you know, and it's like I can feel her anger. And the fact that she's being bullied by this guy who won't let her do the thing that she loves.
Sure.
And that sort of pushed me in a direction of, you know, as a 13, 14 year old kid, like, oh my God, bullies suck. This guy is a bully. And it was really easy then for me to identify bullies later on in life.
Yeah, you know what, though?
Not just because, not just because of that video, but it was just, it was one of those things that was like, it opened my eyes to be able to see more.
Yeah. You know, I don't know. The whole bullies thing, that's a good topic for another time. I think bullies is part of growing up. You gotta have big balls, you know. Your parents gotta teach you, you know what? You're going to these schools and you're gonna be tormented, pushed around and shoved, made fun of your red hair or your big nose or whatever, but you gotta have big balls, man. All this stuff, I don't get it today. It's like, oh, bully this, bully that. It's like, I was kind of pushed around a little bit, but you get a little bit bigger and you're kind of like, all right, I'll push these people back, and they leave you alone. You know, it's part of growing up.
You know, so it's a double-edged sword.
No, I know. It's a tough
You should be able to go to school and not be bullied.
You know what? It's not a
You should also learn how to stand up for yourself. You need to learn.
So if you go to school.
No. Stop.
If you go to school and it says, you know what, Bill? Your nose is as big as Texas. Is that being bullied? Or you know what, Bill? Your sneakers smell like dog manure. Who cares? I don't really care.
But here's the thing. There's a difference between some jackass saying something stupid one time.
Yeah.
Or you walking into school out of fear. Well, you shouldn't be afraid to go to school. Now it's holding. Yeah. So it's a double-edged sword. Yeah. The thing is you should be able to go to school without feeling fear, but you should also be able to stand up for yourself. Somewhere in between there is the bully says something to you once and you figure out, all right, well, that kid's an asshole.
Right.
His opinion doesn't matter. And next time he says something to me, I'm going to stand in his face and go ahead, you little shit. But not everybody has that capacity.
No,
not everybody can.
I'm looking at it.
And that's where the bully issue becomes an issue, is the ones who either incapable or unqualified yet to grow up and become themselves the way they're supposed to be and be able to push off a bully.
Yeah.
You're right. I'm seeing some good comments.
No, I know. I see it coming from Rick. I'm not going to say it. I'm not going to agree to agree, but I've seen both sides of it. You know, I grew up thin. I gained weight. I lost weight. I lost weight. I see the way people treat people that are obese. I see people the way people treat thin people. But I think it's, you know, I don't want to get into it. I'm going to offend a lot of people, but in my eyes, the way I think about it is you got to learn to stick up for yourself. And if you don't, if you can't stick up for yourself, then you're going to be bullied. You know, it's not a perfect world out there. It never will be.
Right.
It never will be ever, ever, ever. It goes to racism. It goes to everything else. You just have to,
life is
sloppy. Yeah, you have to be stronger than everybody
life
else.
Life is sloppy, and you got to
have that.
But mind you, Eric, this is you and I talking 50 years old.
I know, Bill, but you know what? I got pushed around. You know, it's like,
yeah, so you know, it's like, but, and then I figured out how to make friends with
them. I know, but you didn't go back to your parents and say, you know, hey, Junior's beating me up. You end up sticking up for yourself. You know, it's like you get pushed back and then you wail him back with something else. It's like, leave me alone, you know, or you go tell the principal. You tell a teacher, hey, Junior's freaking, he's whatever.
But understand this. This is you and I coming from,
you know what?
A place where you and I both have some intestinal fortitude. There are kids out there that don't have to stand up for themselves stuff. And that's where the bullying becomes a problem. And it's not,
the parents'
responsibility to – it's not the kid's responsibility.
My dad always told me.
The kid who's doing the bullying needs to shut his
mouth. I know. My dad always told me, that he goes, if somebody gets in your face, if somebody goes to hit you, you hit them back twice as hard. I got your back. Nobody ever bothered me. I mean, people kind of, I got pushed around here and there, whatever, you know, whatever. But I never worried about it. Like, I knew if I retaliated, I wasn't going to get in trouble with my parents. Because my dad said, stick up for yourself. There's nobody out there that's better than you.
Right.
Stick up for yourself. But if somebody attacks you, you tell them to back away.
You're very fortunate.
But, you know,
you're very fortunate. Not everybody has.
No, I know. It's a sensitive subject. I get it. I do get it.
But it's fun to talk about this shit. Why do you not ever want to get into the sensitive stuff? Because I love talking the music with you because that's fun. But the sensitive stuff is where the controversy is, where the interesting thing is where we might be able to find something that maybe somebody else hadn't thought about and they were just being bullied and they thought,
let me do this.
That jackass said something and that
let me make one more cocktail real quick and I'll have something to say about it. And then you can comment about my thoughts about how I grew up.
Well, while you're doing that, I'm going to look at the previous comments here because we're getting a lot of.
All right, go ahead. Talk to Rick. Rick's been out on our line here. So.
Rick's going crazy. Right.
30 seconds.
Hobo says, I'm seeing a trend where a song is trending because of TikTok videos. Yeah, you're right, Hobo. That is true. Rick goes to a different topic, but in fairness, definitely much more unfair to some, and that's on the bullying topic. At least while I was getting pushed around, I was yeah, well, you know, that happens too, Rick. Getting laid, getting pushed around, doesn't matter. The big difference in life experience between a tiny insecure person and a huge overconfident person. You're exactly correct, Rick. And that's what I was getting at is, you know, I grew up in a household where I was loved and supported and taken care of. Eric, the same thing. And a certain confidence comes with that. You become a little self-assured. But in another household where, you know, there's not a lot of attention paid to the kid, it's like, you got to fend for yourself, kid. Good luck. And that kid may show up at school with a little bit of an inferiority complex. And that kid shows up and some jackass who thinks, you know, his parents are beating him so he can beat somebody else. He decides to start beating the one that he figures out is the weak one, and that kid is getting bullied. Well, that's not fair. That's not right. And I don't care. So, but that's not right that, you know, the way people are growing up. Yeah, I say, all right, Rick, you see where I'm headed with this is not everybody has the same background to grow up and have a certain level of confidence in themselves. And yeah, Eric, you might be saying it's the parents' problem, but it's a society problem because if the parents aren't doing it, and I'm not saying that, you know, this we're just some great big community and we have to take care of everybody, but there's got to be a point where we say, all right, well, there's a level of stupid that we're not going to allow. And once you cross that level of stupid, then you're hurting someone else. And really it comes down to this, your freedom of speech is perfect right up until the moment your fist is an inch away from my face.
Right.
You can swing all you want, but your freedom of speech goes away when your fist touches my face.
Okay.
And that's what bullying is.
So what happens if you're the
even without the physical contact, bullying is the use of speech in a manner that takes the right away from someone else.
Right. So this is the only thing I'll have to say. Is my dad always told me, stick up for yourself. If you stick up for yourself, I got your back. In other words, don't go around trying to beat everybody up. But if somebody confronts you or attacks you, feel free to you know, whatever, defend yourself. That's the way my dad has always been when I was a younger kid. But there's a lot of things that goes on, and I know in schools today where there's a lot of instigate. There's a lot of instigation that goes on,
right?
And sorry, Chip. My point is this: is that if you're a person that pushes a button to somebody else all the time, saying, you know, you're a wimp, or you got a big nose, or you're just dumb, or whatever, you're not necessarily being a bully, but that person gets tired of it, says, "Get out of my face," and goes and cracks you. You know, that's one thing. If a guy just comes by, you know, in other words, you got to learn. Everybody's got to learn to take care of themselves. Society's not going to take care of you. You have to take care of yourself. And that's kind of my point.
Right.
But is that, you know, you might be, somebody might be straight and somebody might not be straight. And you might get antagonized because you're not straight, but that's you. And you might get picked on and pushed around a little bit. But, you know, because you're a little bit different,
right?
I still think you need to be able to stand up for yourself, you know.
But there has to be a way that
you can't.
Our society says different is okay, and it's not okay to. I mean, there's a difference between ridicule and stupid, and there's a difference between physical assault and beating up the gay kid. There's a big line that gets crossed.
I know what you're getting at.
There's enough. You know where
I know you're going. It's funny because I grew up.
This is the fun part, is because there's not a very good definition of the line necessarily. See, and this is where this makes it interesting, because you and I both know that, yeah, you got to stand up for yourself. But you and I both grew up in a situation where we were encouraged to, and our life experience is completely different than the one who is that kid who is that meek, humble, possibly gay kid or whatever, who gets picked on and doesn't have the support to be able to, because he can't tell his Christian parents that he's gay because they're going to kick him out of the house, and he's 16 years old. These are the things that, these are real life experiences. You and I have lived charmed lives.
Yeah.
Sheltered, charmed lives.
Yeah. We didn't have too much to worry about.
You know, just now we're starting. Yeah. You know, I'm dropping. But you and I are now in a position where we can at least influence the people that we talk to and say, you know, open your mind. Be better to each other.
Right.
Don't get me on the Bill and Ted reference. Be excellent to each other. But really, we should. Well, there's no reason to be a
dad. Let me ask you this, Paul.
I don't care what your problem was, and I don't care that your dad beat you. And I don't really give a crap that your alcoholic father used to punch your mother and do stupid shit. That does not mean you have the right to punch your wife. It does not mean you have the right to beat the crap out of your kids, or growing up in high school, be the bully and punch other kids. That does not give you that right. I'm sorry that happened to you. Grow up. Learn how to deal with it. You live in a society. We have rules. We don't do that to each other.
If somebody kept pushing you around, are you saying it's not right to push them back?
Define pushing around.
I'm saying, like, you show up at school every day, go to chemistry class, and there's one kid or a bunch of kids that kind of zero in on you, and they antagonize you, they push your buttons, they shove you around a little bit. Are you saying it's not the right thing to do to fight back against those kids?
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying some people don't have the capacity.
Right.
To do
that. Yeah.
So here's the example of the two fights that I ever got into in my life, both with bullies. Eighth grade, one of my best buddies, we were both altar boys, and he was a little nerdy, but he was a good kid, and he was my buddy, and I was the friend of all the kids. I was that kid in school who could get along
with me too.
You know, it was whatever. So, but the one bully kid, he and I never really got along well, but he always liked picking on other people, and he was picking on my buddy Dan and tripping him and then pushing him and putzing around with him as we're walking to recess at lunch one day.
Yeah.
And I had enough.
Yeah.
I told him three times, stop it or something's going to happen.
Yeah.
And he kept doing it. And then when Dan hit the ground because he got tripped, I didn't even flinch. I turned around and I grabbed him, put him in a headlock, and held him. And I says, you got to stop this.
Yeah.
This isn't going to happen again. You just hurt him, and that's not happening. I'm not putting up with this. And I sort of, essentially, long story short, I ended up putting him on the ground.
Yeah.
And he laid on the ground for a minute, and I got up and I walked away. I says, this is over.
Right.
And I picked up Dan, and we kept walking. Well, within minutes, he got up and was really mad because I embarrassed him. And he was coming at me. And you know what happened? I will tell you what happened. And this is a life changer. Yeah. every student in that grade with me, who we've gone to school for 8 years yeah. together, every one of them surrounded me face out and wouldn't let him come near me.
Right. They all had your back.
They, because everybody knew this kid was going through some problems and he was going to do something crazy, but I had done the right thing and they all surrounded me and kept him from coming at me.
Yep.
And I was like, that's remarkable. And I couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
And then the next thing I know, I was like the popular kid, but I didn't do anything.
Right.
I didn't,
you did what was right.
As far as I was concerned, I didn't earn it. I didn't deserve it.
It was right.
It was the right thing to do. And that boy never had a problem with me again.
Yeah.
And whenever I was with my buddy Dan, he never had a problem with him.
Right.
Because it was like, okay, you know, this is not going to happen. And I don't know whatever happened to that kid. I don't know if he, I just don't know. But, you know, I had another kid punch me in high school. He was just giving me shit. He punched me flat in the chest. And I just so happened to step back when he threw the punch.
Yeah.
So my step absorbed all the punch and it was like.
Right.
And I think I dropped a pencil and I picked up the pencil. I go, are we done? Can I go to class now?
Yeah.
Are we done? You know, all the other kids were all like, fight. And he throws this punch and it doesn't do anything to me. And he's looking like, I just threw everything at you. Well, I stepped back with it. You know, anybody in boxing would know if you absorb the punch by stepping back, you're not going to.
Sure.
And so he never gave me a hard time again either.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it was like, whatever, dude.
Like, see, I can't. I
just be the asshole you're
I came from a father that was a scrapper, that was. How can I describe my father? My father wouldn't. My father did everything by the book. And he was a big believer in if somebody's going to come after you, you defend yourself. And you defend yourself any way you can. I have your back. As long as you tell me the truth, I have your back. In other words, don't go around and be a bully and pick on people just because you're bigger than them. But I'm saying is that if somebody comes around and says, you know, whatever, blah, 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 and, you know, they start pushing you around. But I personally have never gotten into a fight before. I've stuck up for a lot of people before. I had one person that I carpooled with in eighth grade that we were playing football out on recess and somebody was punching me in the side. And I, I kind of shrugged everybody off me. I'm like, who's punching me? It was the guy that I carpooled with. Why he was punching me, I don't know. But he went down into another room for whatever reason. And I clocked him one. That was the only time I've ever gotten into a fight. But my dad said, if somebody's not treating you right, stick up for yourself. You have to stick up for yourself.
Right.
And that's the way you're going to earn, you know, blah, blah, blah. But I get it. There's it's a little bit different times out there, but I still think it goes on to, you know, it goes on to parenting. It goes on to making the right decisions. You know, it's probably not, you know, I don't know. I don't know if the way I grew up is the best way, but my dad always told me, he's like, you stick up for yourself. And if anybody ever, you know, comes after you or makes you feel like you're threatened,
but
stick up for yourself because I got your back. And
the way you grew up is the best way for you. And not everybody's had that experience. And that's what I'm getting.
No, I know.
And that's why I'm saying, you know, it's
not rocket science though. It's, you know, it's, we should be all taught this.
But again, not everyone is. And if you're not taught it, then you need to have an opportunity to learn it before you.
I know, but you know what? Society can't protect you from everything, right? The principals, the teachers, the hall monitors, whatever, they can't all protect you from that because it's all a big liability these days, you know? But
who else is in the society? Oh, say maybe the students that are around you. You know, somebody has to grow up here and do something and stand up for their friends.
Yeah.
You know,
it's a sensitive subject.
Again, I'm saying that's just what I did, and that worked.
Well, put it this way, I mean,
but not everybody has it.
We both grew up in the '80s. We both wore probably combat boots and had goofy haircuts. And there's people that probably walked past us saying, oh, you look goofy or, you know, whatever, blah, blah. But you did your own thing. But if somebody approached you and wanted to start something with you, you know, you got to defend yourself. You are who you are, right? Well, I mean, in other words, if you're not.
But again, you and I grew up where we both have a sense of self. Everybody has that. And
but what's changed, though, from the 70s and 80s to the 2000s?
It's always been that way. It's always been that way.
Don't you think it's
always been that way?
It's a conversation on time.
Because
I don't know.
And the reason I say it's always been that way, as far as I know, as a 11-year-old, 12-year-old kid, I had to defend my friend because he couldn't do it for himself. He wasn't capable.
No, I know. Well, I didn't have kids. I didn't have kids growing up.
So that's out there. No.
But if I had kids, I'd tell you the same thing. Like if somebody's picking on you, if somebody's getting in your face and shoving you around, you defend yourself, you know?
Well, and I've told my kids in no uncertain terms, you need to do the right thing every time. And if you can't, you need to be able to explain why you couldn't. And we're going to be on your side. I just need all the
time. The best thing is to walk away.
Don't give me the half truth.
Right. The best thing is to walk away. Just walk away from it. It's 7 times out of 10, it's not an issue. When you make the decision to get involved. But my dad was always the person to say, if somebody approaches you or threatens you, you stand up for yourself. You know, don't let them get the best of you. You know, so that's the way I grew up. And so I'm not saying it's the right thing to do. Probably the best thing to do is to walk away. If somebody says something derogatory to you and you say something derogatory back, then you're starting something, right? There's a confrontation that you're starting. But if somebody says something derogatory to you and you walk away from it, there's a good chance it might just go away. You know, they're all looking for a response, right? It's those kids that are...
You got to hear this.
Just what is it that you want to do?
Well, we want to be free. We want to be free to do what we want to do. And we want to get loaded. And we want to have a good time. And that's what we're going to do.
What the hell is that from?
We're going to have a good time. We're going to have a party.
That is from Rebel Without a Cause.
Oh, gotcha. How appropriate.
Yeah.
All right. We're 1 hour and 37 minutes into this lovely podcast.
Let's get this crap over with.
Let's get this podcast.
Nobody wants to call in. Everybody's chickening out. And we so appreciate everybody chickening in and throwing comments our way. We love that.
Yeah, Wednesday.
We'd sure like to more humans listen to us. Calling us and talking to us.
Bill, it's been real. It's been real nice.
Cheers, Folly Dodd.
Cheers, Folly.
Hobo,
we're out of here, hobo. We'll catch up with you on Wednesday.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks for joining us. That's been Eric.
That's been Bill.
As far as we know, this has been Low Standards and Pores. Eric, where do they find us?
You know, Bill, I'm starting to forget. There's a few places that I thought we were approved on or not. We got to talk about that. But looking for us on Podbean.
We're here
Wednesday, 9 o'clock. We'll be back on. Look for us. We love you guys.
We'll get heated. We'll have fun. We'll be silly. It'll be great.
Oh, we're not on Twitter yet.
Somebody to call in and join.
No, we're not on Twitter yet. And Rick, good evening to you too. Have a good one. We'll talk about this stuff again. Maybe we'll continue next week with some good stuff.
We're always open to a call in, even if you want to throw your 2 cents in for a minute or two. We can do that shit next
week. God knows we don't listen to Bill all night long.
Dear God, you don't want to listen to me all night long. Let alone.
Right, Aaron. Right.
I can't believe you guys lasted this long with the two of us. Get out of here. Eric, hang on.
All right, get lost, Bill. I will talk to you.
No, you
talk to you by Wednesday. Just and hold on 1 second. Hold on. What?
Bite me.